Hi everybody, and welcome to Yachting International Radio. You've tuned in to Taylor Tech Stories with myself, Ben Taylor. And this week we've got Kieran Haslam from Princess Yachts. He's the Chief Marketing Officer there, to tell us about his story and career journey. And we're also going into a little bit of environmental consciousness and how that's impacting the industry and our day-to-day lives as well. So Kieran, I'll immediately pass to yourself to introduce what you do and who you are, and then we'll go into kind of your journey.
Sure. So as Ben, you've just said, my name is Kieran Haslam. I'm not from the part of the world that I find myself in right now. I'm in the southwest of England, where I preside over the marketing communications of Princess Yachts. I have done so since the very start of 2015, and we've been on a really interesting journey to sort of redefine who we are within the marine sector, but probably more importantly, who we are to customers and who we are in the luxury space.
Right. Okay. Amazing. We've already just had. I should have started recording about 20 minutes ago. We just had a great conversation about your journey in the automotive industry and everything you've done there. But if we could rewind to like the very start of working life for Kieran, what does that look like? What's the first job? And what do you learn and pick up? And how have you evolved into what you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. So let me start at the very beginning and I'll try to be whistle stop on it. I was super fortunate that I had a very close family structure because we were an expatriate family. My parents immigrated to Australia in 1970, and I was born in Perth in Western Australia. And when I was about six years old, my dad had accomplished many great things in the world of engineering. He was a bit of an engineering genius, maybe not the best businessman in the world, but certainly very, very astute when it came to looking at things that people hadn't seen before. So he was involved in all sorts of interesting projects, from the first crimpable battery terminal, developing non-ferrous metal alloys for cylinder heads for car companies. You know, the famous America's Cup keel with a aluminium core inside it, and all of those sorts of interesting projects. And that took us around the world as an expatriate family. So we were a unit of four, very closely knit. And I was fortunate that my sister, my dad and my mum were all people who were really interested in things, whether it was science or art, you know, theology, whatever it might be. It was always a household filled with discussion and ideas and interesting, challenging conversations. So when I wanted to start life off and as a career, I was hell bent for leather on being a marine biologist because I loved Cousteau, watching him on the Amazon and various other parts of the world. And I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau. And after a while, I sort of started to get addicted to David Attenborough. So nature and the world, the underwater world, I was super interested in fishes. I've still got almost like a dictionary memory kind of ability to shout out the scientific names of most aquarium fish, because I'm really into fishes as well. And I started off in marine biology at the Australian Maritime College in Tasmania. And this was after we had sort of traveled the world a little bit and lived in California, lived in Singapore, and lived in Malaysia. So we were quite a global family, nomadic kind of a family. I started studying marine biology. I sort of fell out of love with the idea because it seemed a lot more about the bureaucracy and less about the romantic filmmaking that I thought it was going to be. So I ventured off into straight sciences and then into engineering, and I graduated in engineering technology. I then worked for a short period of time with my father in one of his engineering businesses. And I realized that as much as I love my dad, every day being with him wasn't going to work. So I wanted to do something radically different. So I joined a band and started to tour around the world. And I had an astonishingly lucky career as a musician, traveling all around the world. I think there are much better musicians than me who were probably more deserving of the opportunities I got, but somehow or the other, I managed to wedge myself in there, surrounded myself with some of the best musicians on planet Earth at the time, And I toured. I went through Latin America, Europe, Asia. It was really wonderful. And eventually I sort of joined many bands. I was a bit of a hired gun, and because I had an approach to music which was very versatile. So I'm a bit eclectic. I could be playing something in country and western one second, something bebop jazz the next, or something hardcore rock and pop. And so people liked that versatility, and they hired me for their projects and their bands and their tours. And on one such tour, I went to Muscat in Oman. I had just recorded and released a DVD of a series of concerts I had done in tribute to Jimi Hendrix. And I had also recorded my own original compositions, and I was writing for film and television at the time as well, spending a lot of time in studios. And I went into this band, joined this band for this one particular tour in Muscat, and I bumped into the woman of my dreams. I subsequently, very promptly, like literally after about 2 weeks, I knew I was going to ask her to marry me. And I waited, because everyone said, no, don't be so crazy, she'll think you're Looney Tunes. So I waited as long as I could, which was about 2 months, and I asked her to marry me. She very foolishly accepted, and she's my wife today, mother of my two kids. But that took my career on a different trajectory. Now, it's probably worth me mentioning that whilst I was touring as a musician, in the first days, you can go real total rock and roll. And although I was playing jazz, I think some of the jazz musicians were more rock and roll than the rock and roll stars. But that party life wears off quickly. And after a couple of years of doing that, I started to focus on writing a lot. So I was writing for magazines and just for free, not getting paid, sending an article into that publication or that publication about a country I was in, a car I had seen, you know, a journey I went on, or a person I met. And then, you know, time and time again, I get published. And I thought, well, actually, I might be pretty good at this. So so when I met my wife, Vicky, and asked her to marry me, she said to me, it would be great if you could stick around and not be traveling all around the world. And I said, sure. And so I quit the music industry and took a role in PR, and started in a small PR company. And I'm quite a creative type. I have this ability to jump into extreme creativity one second and then be quite logical and commercial the next. It's a little schizophrenic, but my CV sort of represents that in a way. So I started doing interesting things in PR and rethinking about what PR was, less of a corporate mouthpiece and more of an idea generation lab. And that took me into advertising. From advertising, I went into publishing and media, and worked for some really wonderful people who were very well connected, and was able to build this media company up. And one of the products in the media company was a magazine, which I presided over as well. During that time, I started to realize that I could do a lot more with a few of my passions, one of them being cars. And I started to write a lot about cars. And I was fortunate that I went all around the world for car companies and got to, for example, see the first Ferrari FF be, you know, launched out of the mouth of a helicopter in Brunico in the Alps, and all of these sorts of really interesting things. And so the cars sort of developed. I was very active in the Porsche Club as well, and so I started to get a name in cars. And eventually I had a pretty rare 911 at the time that I was using as a daily driver. And this was in the Middle East in Oman. And I went to a car event, which I wasn't really so keen on attending, to be honest, but it was an event for Bentley Motors. And I was standing in the car park far too early for the event to begin, because I was basically trying to dock in and then leg it out of there and go and attend my mother-in-law's 60th birthday. So I was under duress. So I basically said, well, yeah, okay, I'll get there early. And I got there early, and I was standing around in the car park next to my car, and this lovely old gentleman started talking to me. We got into a deep conversation about cars, where I flat out insulted him because I didn't know who he was at the time. But he was on the board of Bentley Motors. And after realizing that and telling me who he was, I profusely apologized. But the dialogue was quite an enjoyable one. I think he enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was very open, very honest. And a few weeks later, he asked me to join Bentley. So I did. And that took me around the world as well. So I was very fortunate with Bentley Motors. I was out with a, there were about three of us who were sent from the factory, initially out into China. So I set up Bentley Motors in China, along with two colleagues, and I was responsible for marketing basically and product development, reported to me at the time. So it was an interesting time because China was just blossoming. And, you know, we grew that market very quickly. And that gave me the opportunity to come over to the headquarters in the UK after doing just under 3 years in China for Bentley. And I moved up to Crewe, a bit of a rude awakening from traveling the world and having a lifestyle that I had and to be in Crewe. But it was at the factory and it was fantastic because it gave me the chance to do some really exciting things, really focus on things that Bentley wasn't focusing on globally. You know, things like redefining luxury as being gender neutral. You know, typically Bentley was for old men. And it was very much oriented around that idea of, you know, a Panama hat on the parcel shelf, you know, and you know, it really needed to change because the people who were driving our cars were, it was, you know, Kim Kardashian, it was David Beckham. And we had to sort of reorient things. So I set about doing everything I could to appeal to a much younger, much hipper audience and one which was neither masculine nor feminine, but straight down the middle, which I think is the secret to true luxury brands. They are a little bit of everything for everyone in a way, but they're also very specialized. And if you can get that sort of balance right. So after a little bit of doing that, as you and I have talked about, Ben, before, I got involved in innovation at Bentley and looking at connected car services and what you could do with, you know, the future of, you know, mobility. And this was back then when no one was looking at it, to be honest. So it wasn't such a popular topic to discuss with many people. They were convinced that their old model of car sales had to be preserved at the time. Never in a million years would a Bentley be electric, etc., etc., you know. And so that was an interesting time for me. But sure enough, someone came a knocking and asked me, hey, look, there's this boat company called Princess, and they're down in the southwest of England, and it's a really interesting company. It just needs something, and they haven't seen it yet. Do you want to come down and take a look? And I said, sure, maybe, no. I decided no. I was enjoying some of the really boundary pushing opportunities I had at the time in and around the future of cars, and I didn't really want to get distracted by boats at that moment in time. So I sort of said yes at first and then politely declined. But you know, they say love rears its ugly head. It reared it at least two more times after that. And after about 9 months, I finally conceded and came down to Plymouth, had a look around what Princess was all about, and I was just blown away, both egotistically and from a you know, from a holistic perspective. And you know, the egotistical side was, hey, there's a great opportunity to do something that I don't think anyone has seized yet, and I could be the one to seize it. And the holistic one was, you know, there's this idea that, you know, you should celebrate a chef who does everything in his country kitchen or her country kitchen within a 50 mile radius, and so everything on your plate is local. You know, the stuff from over the road at that farmer, and you know, the honey from the beehives in the garden, and etc. Well, what sort of occurred to me is that Princess is doing that in manufacturing, and that is something really, really exceptional. And there's very, very few companies that actually make in the UK, and I should know because I've been to every British car manufacturer, and I was responsible for marketing one of them as well in the headquarters. And I can tell you that when they talk about things being crafted or manufactured in the UK, it's it more often than not is really just sub-assembly. But here you had this yacht maker in the southwest of England going from raw material to finished product. on premises, which was just incredible, absolutely incredible. And so I spent days walking around the factory, going into far corners and going, what, you mean you make that? When everyone else on planet Earth is buying that from a factory in maybe the south of China that's making, say, black water tanks, you know, and here you are making your very own one. It's something that you would see maybe on really big mega yachts or really big super yachts, but in what is essentially a manufacturing approach to luxury yachts, it was something unique. And so that's really how I got suckered into being at Princess. And that's sort of that journey, really.
Wow. Wow. Kieran, that's an amazing story. That's incredible.
So it's a little bit different, isn't it? It explains why I'm so off-piste most of the time, though.
I saw the guitar in your background and thought, all right, is he a musician and stuff like that? Because I'm a keyboard player and a pianist, so I thought, oh, there's that. And then you talk about marine biology. I used to have an aquarium. I got obsessed with it for about 3 or 4 years. So I was going through school, like after homework and stuff, I'd be going researching different fish and all sorts. So I had that obsession as well. And then the way it kind of rolls one to another, and then innovation is really fun, right? And then how you took to that in Bentley and across all these different sectors to then really appreciate what Princess Yachts was all about. And just how that journey evolves is amazing to hear about. So so thank you very much for that, Kieran. That's
yeah. Do you know, I'll tell you one thing, Ben. The one thing I can definitely say, and I'm really proud to be able to say this, is I've always done what my heart has told me to do. And without sounding facetious about this, I mean, I haven't done something because of the paycheck, you know, that's been dangled at the end of it. I've been fortunate that that's always worked out, but it's never been my focus. It's always been what value can I add? But more importantly, you know, how do I go to bed at night and how do I wake up in the morning feeling like this is something which is fun? And this is something which I, you know, if I don't feel like I'm adding value anymore, then I don't really want to be in it. And I'm really fortunate that I've followed my heart. And, you know, clearly I was so passionate. I've always been passionate about music. I never did it as a career until after I graduated, but I've always played music and I've always been a guitar player. And I, you know, for me, it was just a heart moment. And I was, again, fortunate that I had people around me who understood that and went, yeah, go for it. You know, and we can see that if you're happy, you're going to add value to everything that you're doing. So just go for it. So I've been really, really very, very fortunate. Some great mentors along the way as well, who've said to me, oh, you know what, you're going to enjoy yourself in the yacht world because it's different. And it's funny because there are a lot of people from automotive who have made their way into the yacht world, and some of them survive and some don't. I'd say that automotive thinking in the yacht, in the arena of yachts, doesn't really do so well. I'd say automotive thinking and automotive behavior. But that's more because I think there's a lot of automotive thinking, or a lot of automotive behavior is nonsensical. There's unnecessary structures and hierarchies there. I'm not an automotive industry guy. I'm a car guy. And that's why I think I've been able to make that that transition across and enjoy it, you know.
Right. Okay, amazing. So before we wrap up, we'll touch on the environmental consciousness and how that's evolved. And then we'll have a look into the future and what you Kieran want to get up in the next kind of 5 years and looking forward.
Sure.
So just to touch on environmental consciousness, what are you seeing from a consumer and industry perspective that really impacts commercials and bottom lines? Because I know there's a lot of talk about being environmentally conscious. I always have this classic example in my head of seeing exhibition stands that have kind of biodegradable chairs or something, and it's a nod to it, so it's all right for awareness and stuff, but in terms of real impact on it, it's minimal to
well I yeah you know, first thing let me make a really, really bold statement here. I'm truly ticked off by seeing these statements from brands, businesses around the world that say we are passionate about the environment. It's like, you know, that is ridiculous. It's not about being passionate anymore. It's a responsibility. I liken it to someone going, we're passionate about not releasing those toxins into that river. You know, it's like, come on, we've moved on from that now. We all have a responsibility, end of story. What I'd say about customers is they are absolutely bang on to it, and they know it and they feel it. And whatever the motivation, whether it's being embarrassed and succumbing to peer pressure, being embarrassed by their kids, or the fact that they just genuinely feel like, okay, I know that a yacht may not be good for planet Earth right now, but what can I do to make it the yacht that is better for planet Earth than any other yacht out there? And I think that's what's coming from customers. So they're approaching us and saying, look, you know, what can I do to have hybrid on that Princess? What can I do to have, a vegan interior? What can I do to have, you know, this fully sustainable or more efficient air conditioning systems, or, you know, whatever it might be? And there's a lot of those conversations. In fact, I was involved in one yesterday, which is quite a serious conversation, looking at a hybrid propulsion system on one of our X95s. And this never happened 5 years ago. It's happening literally every 2 weeks. We're having a serious customer ask us a question that we're having to scratch our heads about. You know, how do we find an answer to that? It is literally what they want, after all, and we are merely builders of their boat. So if their boat is that, we have to find a way to build that. And so there's a great amount of pressure which is coming from customer, which is awesome. Industry, I think it's literally like watching a very, very large feathered bird stick its head in the sand and hide behind all sorts of silly things. You know, I've heard people hide behind, you know, the conversations about rare earth materials. You know, no one's talking about hiding behind those for, you know, a simple iPhone, which uses 8 different rare earth materials, you know. So it's a remarkable thing. It's easy for the industry to do that because they don't have the answers. So it's the path of least resistance. And as Thoreau always said, or was quoted as saying, you know, the path of least resistance leads to crooked rivers and crooked men. And I think that we can't find the path of least resistance. We have to commit some time, some resource, some money, as well as people, to finding out what the cleverer ways forward are. And you know, if there was a body that could help us to do that within the marine sector, that would be amazing. We don't have that. In automotive spheres, they have these governing bodies. They have these associations which actually do something, you know. And I think that we have a real lack of that in the yacht world, and we need more of that, really, so that our hands are forced. When our hands are forced, we've got some brilliant people in our industry. You know, if you look at the time it takes to develop, say, a car, you know, everything is broken apart. So that person is responsible for that tiny little element of that product. That doesn't occur in our industry. We tend to be much more, conceptual about the whole project and inclusive of the whole project. So you've got some brilliant minds with multiple disciplines, you know, that they are brilliant at as well. And that means that, you know, for example, at Princess, we can bring a model that never existed 2 years ago to life and delivered to the first owner within 2.5 years. You know, that's remarkable. That's impossible in the car industry. So we've got that behavior and that thinking, that adaptability, and we just need to start to apply it. And I think, you know, there has to be a little bit of a shakeup to do that. We've got to stop hiding our heads in the sand. The good thing is that the customers want it, and where the customers want something, we have to deliver, all of us. And it can be really fickle, right? Our market is very fickle. It's all based on emotion. And either you're appealing to someone that at the peak of that elation and that moment of wanting to procure your product, or you're not. And if you can appeal to them, then, and part of their journey is, hey, I want to, it may just be a tick box exercise, by the way, Ben. It might just be, you know, yeah, so what? It's still this polluting 27-year-old diesel technology that's propelling it, but I have the mushroom leather instead of the, you know, the cowhide. But it's what they want. If that's what they want, then we have to deliver it. And it's only going to make us better in the end, to be able to look at all these viable alternatives. We also need to push the supply chain to do more, because they're being a bit lackluster as well. Primarily because the industry is so small. If you look at the engine manufacturers, we're such a tiny sliver of what they actually do and who they actually provide, that we don't have that voice, which is, again, why the associations and the legislation and the rest of it needs to start to kick in.
Right, that's a fantastic message. That's That's awesome, Kieran. Just to wrap up, what's your vision for the future for Princess Yachts and yourself as an individual? What do you want to get up to? What are you kind of looking forward to?
Well, you know, we've shame on us because we've all been so negligent of the world around us and the tools around us until the pandemic came along and we said, well, hang on a minute, I don't need to jump in a plane or jump in a train and spend 5 hours to get down to Ben to have this conversation. I can do it via Zoom. And, you know, I think that there's going to be a really great opportunity in my mind. The companies that are going to really do well post-pandemic are those who will be, let's call them, categorized as hybrid, where there's this real world interaction, but they've really embraced what they can do virtually and digitally. And I think, you know, the answer is definitely not to make, you know, 1996-esque avatars and a virtual marina and put on a virtual boat show, which redirects you to content that exists already on that brand's website. That is not the answer, right? And I want to be really clear about that because there was a lot of that nonsense going on in the first couple of months of 2020. But what I think it means is we now have the opportunity to be with the customer the second they want us with them, on their watch, in their living rooms, you know, at their kitchen table, whatever it might be. And so our ability to react to customer in real time is greater than it has ever been. And we need to see that opportunity and start to develop ourselves and our way of interacting and building brands, building relationships and selling products and designing products. We need to be able to use these tools around us. And so I'm super excited because my challenge to the Princess team is not to be that hybrid brand, but to be that brand that goes fully electric, which means that, you know, we've really got to shake things up and rethink things. And even just from a conservation perspective, you know, moving boats around the world to attend a boat show or a boat show that drives pylons into the ocean so that they can build a temporary pontoon for 3 weeks to put on a show, that is not sustainable. And you know, in much the same way, 16-pound flights to Mallorca from the UK are not sustainable either. And so that we have to make a decision that that's no longer viable for us on environmental grounds and move forward. And we've got a great opportunity. I'm very excited. The products are changing faster than ever before. I think we're going to have to be electric in terms of not just our products, but also our infrastructure. We're going to look at any kind of fuel cell technology, whether ammonia, hydrogen, whatever it might be. We need to have a look at all of the viable options, look at the best ones and start trying them out. And of course, we'll fail, but there's nothing worse than not trying. You know, we need to keep trying stuff out. And I definitely want to be part of that that wave to try stuff out and to see whether it works. And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, find out what did and what we can make better to keep going.
Right, amazing. There's nothing worse than not trying. Right, I'm going to take that one. That's very good. I like it. So, Kieran, thank you so much for coming on. Your insights and your journey has been fantastic. It's had me absolutely hooked. And it's fascinating.
Great.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. All the best.
All right, thank you, everybody. So you've just been online with Taylor Tech Stories, myself, Ben Taylor. Our guest this week has been Kieran Haslam from Princess Yachts. And next week, we'll be back with another Taylor Tech Story here on Yacht and International Radio. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.